This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey all, it's the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Best bits from the show on Tuesday, May the 7th. ATM in full flow at the Dubai World Trade Center. ATM, for those that don't know, Arabian travel market. So the great and the good of the travel industry and all its guises, be that hotels, aviation, tour operators, they're all down there at the moment, and therefore no shortage of headlines and big stories coming out of it in that particular sphere. We talked to a couple of the key shareholders, and none more so than Antonualdo Neves, who is the CEO of Etihad Airways. They've got a significant stand at ATM this year, and with good reason as well. Interesting chat with the boss. Mohammed Al-Zabi is the Group Chief Executive Officer of Miral. That's the team behind the likes of a number of the theme parks and a number of the entertainment venues on Yas Island, Sadiet Island and others. They've seen extraordinary numbers. How much of that has been helped by their Chief Island Officer, new one, of course, announced in the last couple of days? And Guy Hutchinson, President, Middle East and Africa of Hilton. He's back at Hilton, started this new role at the beginning of this year, formerly at Rotana. Before that, long career at Hilton. Guy was kind enough to join us early in studio as well, just to talk about the Hilton pipeline and what we can expect from them and their various brands across the region in the years to come. So bit of a travel and tourism theme, with good reason as well, as Arabian travel market continues throughout the week here in Dubai. That's all right here on the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And we are talking all things, you guessed it, tourism. We're flying business class, and I hope that he won't mind. Maybe we're leaving it all behind. We're flying business class, and I hope that he won't mind. Except Richard's been sitting in the cheap seats for his big interview. One of the big names that we've got on the Business Breakfast for you over the week, as we speak to airline bosses, hotel bosses, destination supremos, ministers this morning, and the rest. It's, I think, the most interesting ATM that we've had in a long time. We were all getting a little bit sick about talking about coming back to pre-pandemic levels. Now we have what's going on at Boeing. We have a giant new airport. We have navigating the rains and other weather. We have shifts in seasonality and what counts as summer. And we've got some pretty much confirmed IPOs rather than just the usual speculation, which doesn't mean that we're not having the tried and tested discussions about, are you buying a couple of new planes?
Yeah, one of the guys I spoke with yesterday was the CEO of Etihad Airways, Antonualdo Neves. We heard the full interview a little bit earlier on. If you missed it, it'll be on the social media channels and we'll hear more of him a little bit later on. But very quickly, this is one of the things he spoke to me about. They grew 41% in the first quarter of this year. Happy days, so they're growing fast, but the challenge is to get the planes. We know Boeing in particular, but also Airbus, have challenges meeting that demand globally. So he says airlines like Etihad that are growing have got a box clever to get planes. So a month ago, an obscure airline, obscure to us, in Vietnam was facing challenges. Bamboo Airlines. They just ordered six new Airbus A321neos and suddenly they were up for grabs. So this is Antonualdo Neves explaining how they pounced to get those six planes.
We have six A321neos arriving. There's semester until June. These planes were not in our order book in October last year. So I got six planes from Bamboo Airlines. They were an opportunity, right? Planes that are flying for only 1 year, 2 years, brand new planes. And we were quick and we have good credit rating, right? So everyone wants to rent planes to Etihad. So we got six planes. Next year, we may add about 15 planes.
Antonualdo of Etihad. Later today, we're going to be speaking to Sheikh Ahmed bin Said Al Maktoum.
We are indeed. One of the things I like the most, and we're going to hear more from Antonualdo throughout the show this morning. I just quite like saying Antonualdo, if I'm honest, we could start there. Is I liked the fact that you addressed with him, as we will be with the boss of Emirates a little bit later on, as we will be with the Dubai tourism boss tomorrow, How do we look at what happened in the rains? We know that Sir Tim Clark published sort of an open letter that in some ways was an apology as well as an explanation. It was shared a lot on LinkedIn and other forms of media. What did we learn from what happened last month? Something that we haven't dealt with before here in Dubai. How does it change operations for things like airlines, which is what you put to Anto Noaldo? What do they now need to factor in? But what does it also mean for the way that we market Dubai and expectations? We've already addressed it with a lot of events bosses as well.
We have. And there are learnings to an extent, you know, what can Dubai do differently? But to be honest, and Paul Griffiths and others made that point, there's actually not that much you can do differently. If you get these ultra extreme weather events, it's going to cause disruption. And Anthony Aldo said in the interview, look, we were lucky in Abu Dhabi. We didn't get hit as hard as Dubai. If you get weather like that in Dubai, you build all the drains you want. There's still going to be disruption. Will there be learnings? Of course there will. But realistically, that kind of weather, you're going to have to stop flying planes.
But it's not just how you physically deal with a crisis as well. It's everything from communications, isn't it, to managing expectations. I mean, one of the things that Natalie from TEC was saying the other day is that they are now going to write into the contracts that they've got for events. They're used to speakers kind of, you know, winging it a little bit in terms of getting in, flying in the morning, being on stage 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. She said that's not, no pun intended, going to fly anymore. They're going to write into contracts that people need to come in the night before so that they don't run the risk of anyone getting stuck anywhere.
Which is all well and good, but we know, for example, on the speaker circuit, if you add in a travel day for an international speaker, they're going to charge you an extra day.
Plus you've got a hotel cost and.
Yeah, but if it's a speaker like Tony Robbins, who Tom was watching last week, he was there with the guys at Aldar for their event. If you get an extra day of Tony Robbins, the hotel room is not the big extra cost, is it?
But it's a lot. Look, it's an awful lot to factor up. It makes ATM a lot more interesting this year. Summer numbers are something that we're going to be discussing very shortly with the boss of morale, because theirs are absolutely stonking. 90% growth in terms of hotel stays on Yas Island for June to August. That should be a quiet season. They've seen 90%+ growth in terms of visitors to the islands over July and August. There's more indoor activities. I'm interested in the, you know, we love a change and a trend. A shift in seasonality is certainly something that we have been discussing with more than one punter on the Business Breakfast, and will continue to do so through the week.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We're in the cheap seats for this one. They had their economy class seats on display at Arabian Travel Market, and we are sitting in them. But I spoke to him about the performance of the airline. Growth up more than 40% in the first quarter of this year. And so began by asking Anton Aldo, cracking start to the year, what's next?
I mean, our long-term aspiration is to double the size of the airline as compared to last year in 6 years. What we're trying to do is to front-load the growth. And for a very simple reason, right? If you front-load the growth, you can restructure the network and the hub quicker. And then it's easier for us to provide to our customers the schedule they need. So we're going to be growing about 30% per year this year and next year again. Next year there is big growth ahead of us. After that we slow down a little bit so that we do in 7 years about 10% per year.
Where are you going to get the planes from? You've spoken before about the fact that it's not easy. You don't just go on Amazon.
I mean, we're working hard to get planes. We have 6 321 NEOs arriving this semester until June. These planes were not in our order book in October last year. So we're very opportunistic about situations that we face in the industry.
How did you get them?
So I got 6 planes from Bamboo Airlines. They were an opportunity, right? Planes that are flying for only 1 year, 2 years, brand new planes. And we were quick. And we have good credit rating, right? So everyone wants to rent planes to Etihad. So we got 6 planes. Next year, we may add about 15 planes. And they're going to come. You'll see.
So in terms of the route network, A lot of it is adding extra destinations in countries you already fly to and adding frequency as well. What's the plan? Where's that growth going to come from?
I mean, there's a lot of growth to Southeast Asia and Europe, right? We also did a lot this year in the US. So US, we just announced the 380, right? Which is not more frequency, but it's more capacity. We just announced at Paris, right, for the 380. Happy about that as well. And that's capacity, right? So between the US, Europe, and Southeast Asia and GCC, I mean, it looks a lot, but these are the four markets we're putting a lot of energy right now.
So it's all looking very good. There's growth, there's more aircraft on the way, there's demand. Financial results were good. Last time we spoke, we mentioned the IPO. More stories in the newspapers this weekend, obviously. Any progress on that that you could share with me?
I mean, these stories are going to come and go, right? It's normal. The airline is making a lot of progress. We don't have the IPO as an objective, right? Our mandate from the shareholder is very clear, is to deliver great customer experience and make money and be sustainable, be profitable. For us to one day to get a go-ahead from the shareholder, in the end, they decide. We need three things, right? The first thing we need is we need to make sure that the airline is expanding its margins. That is happening, right? We need to make sure that we have a growth story that we're delivering. We're starting that right now. And we need to improve in governance, right? You're going to see that we're going to be publishing our results on a quarterly basis right now so that we increase transparency, for instance, right? So our obligation is to be ready. Whenever the shareholder believes the right time, we're going to be ready. It's not an end game. You're going to see that our balance sheet is really, really strong right now. So whenever is the good time, we're going to go, but that's a decision for the shareholder.
So in terms of some of the other issues that you're looking at the moment, two things have happened since we last spoke, less than 2 months ago. One, Dubai confirming it's going to move everything, lock, stock and barrel, up to Almaty 2. Only a hop, skip and a jump from your home base at Zayed International, and we've had the rains and the floods. What are your takeaways from those two things?
I think it's great for the UAE, great for the region. I mean, if you think about it, right, 30 years ago, and you think about it today, and you think 20 years ahead, I think it's amazing for the region. I mean, the more infrastructure we have, the more people come to the region, the more efficient the airlines are, the better for everyone. I mean, when I came here at first, I had no idea about the efficiency that we can take out of the airlines in this region, right? And it's amazing, right? And I'm sure that Dubai is going to invest in the new airport, and it's going to be good for everyone. I think it just raises the bar. I mean, our airport is today a reality. We can go up to 45, 50 million passengers in Abu Dhabi. And I think over the next 5 to 7 years, it's going to be Abu Dhabi growing a lot. And then we'll have a new phase where the new airport in Dubai is going to grow a lot. And that's all, they work well together. So the more we do, the better for the UAE and for the region.
And lessons from the rain and the floods that we saw, not just from Etihad and Abu Dhabi Airport, but generally speaking, the climate change, these impacts, how does that impact your decisions as the chief executive of an airline?
We were lucky, first and foremost. The rain did not hit our biggest bank. So we actually did not cancel one flight. We did not cancel one flight during that period, right? And we only managed to do that because we have a new terminal, we have a new airport, and because the team prepared a lot. And you probably remember, there was a rain about 4 weeks before the first rain. And that was a good learning exercise for us. So the team is ready. I mean, I come from a country where you have this kind of problem every now and then, right? I think what we saw here, I mean, it was challenging, but I think Abu Dhabi dealt with very, very well, right? And I think Dubai was less lucky, right? Because they had more rain. They had in a period of the day that was challenging for the airlines here. But I think they learned a lot through that process. And next time, it's going to be better for everyone.
Well, you mentioned your country there, Brazil. I opened a Financial Times this morning. Big story about Mubadala investing $13 billion, with a B, billion dollars into Brazil. And part of it, or a lot of it, is into biofuels. And I thought, well, that's right up Antonaldo's street. He's Brazilian, and he's putting sustainable aviation fuel in some of his jets. So I'm going to ask you about that. Well, what do you make of this investment? You know a little bit about it.
Yeah, I know a little bit about it. First of all, I think Mubadala is an amazing company. I think the kind of investments they're making in Brazil is terrific. The UAE is really willing to do more business with Brazil. Brazilians are a big contingent of tourists to Dubai, right? They come here a lot. I mean, Emirates has daily flights to São Paulo and to Rio. I mean, I think it's extremely important that Mubadala is doing that. As you know, Brazil has a lot of expertise in renewable energy. I mean, 50% of the cars in Brazil, 50% of fuel, gasoline, right? Not gasoline, it's ethanol. 50% of the cars in Brazil, they run on ethanol for years, right? Since 82. I remember when I was a kid, right? My mom going to the gas station to put ethanol from sugarcane. So I think Mubadala is going to be very successful. I'm very fond of the project because it's in my hometown where I grew up. So I'm sure it's going to be amazing for Abu Dhabi. It's going to be amazing for the UAE and amazing for Brazil as well. And I wish them all the best. And however I can help, I'll help, because I believe these two countries are amazing countries.
Finally, Antonaldo, we're here at Arabian Travel Market. If people are watching on TV, they can see. If they're listening on radio, they can't. We're sitting in the economy class seats that you've got on display here. Now, I tend to think that high-flying executives like you wouldn't have a clue what economy class looks like. But you tell me no, you do sit at the back of the bus sometimes when you're flying, not just with this airline, but with others.
I mean, with Etihad too, right? I think I've been, over the past year, a couple of times in economy, and I, when I arrived in Etihad, one thing that I really want to make sure is that we define our aspiration, right, in a way that we capture all the segments, right? And we define it that we want to be the airline everyone wants to fly. When I mean everyone, I really mean everyone. So I have to have a great value proposition for everyone in the plane. It's not only about the residents. It's not only about our suites, our first class, our business class, but it's also an extremely important about their economy class. So we will not stop investing in the economy class product. I mean, we want to have an experience that is at the same time competitive, because I need to compete, right? And pleasant for our customers. So I'm a big fan of economy. I believe the economy passengers, they deserve great experience. And I think Etihad is one airline that is very much focused on that.
And you're not too proud to buckle up in an economy class seat yourself if you need to?
I mean, I'm proud to fly Etihad no matter what I do, right? I mean, I love flying Etihad. I think we have crew that is amazing. I bet you your experience in some airlines in economy can be even better than business. If you have the right crew in the plane, I mean, and we do have, your experience is just different.
Antonaldo Neves there, CEO of Etihad Airways. I agree with pretty much everything he says. But to say that Etihad Airways economy class is better than business class in some airlines, that's bold. I'm going to find out this week because I'm flying Etihad economy class. Always good to speak to Antonaldo there down at the Arabian Travel Market. And so many more ATM interview and interviews to come this week. Never mind this week, within the next hour.
Yeah, there is indeed. So one of the people that we are going to be speaking to within the next hour, staying in Abu Dhabi, is the guys from Morale. So they are in charge of a lot of what goes on Yas Island and Sadiat Island. And Rich was talking there about the rains to Antonaldo Neves. We've been talking quite a lot about the shift in seasonality from everyone to hotel bosses, and I'm sure we're going to bring it up with the regional boss of Hilton in about 20 minutes, but also with events people as well, saying that, you know, we have to have a look at how we market ourselves, and the seasonality changes are affecting everything. And one of the things they're affecting is tourism and when people come in and what's considered to be summer. So I give you the morale numbers for Yas and Sadiat. Very good. Very good. 38% up in the number of visitors to Yas Island overall for the year. Sadiat up 44, and they've broken it down into what they've seen for concert goers, what they've seen for theme park goers, what they've seen for MICE. So that's meetings, incentives, conference and exhibition travel?
Yes.
Business travel, effectively.
The C can sometimes stand for something else, is it conferences or conventions, but that's splitting hairs. You're right. That's what MICE is.
Stuff where you've hired a hotel that's got a big ballroom and a load of rooms, basically. That's up 77% on the year before. But the number that really jumped out at me was summer. 96% up in visits to Yes and Seriette for summer, 90% up for the hotels on Yes in June to August. Now, they've got more indoor stuff going on in terms of attractions, in terms of museums, in terms of SeaWorld, which is also indoors. And the more indoor stuff you've got to do, the more of a summer destination we become.
I mean, it's just... extraordinary, is that overstating it? To double your summer traffic, to double traffic in your lowest season. I mean, that is going some. It really is. And I'm sure there are deals, and the average room rate isn't going to be as high on August the 12th as it is on November the 12th. But nevertheless, that's going some, isn't it?
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Now we're about to talk to a man about some exceptional numbers and an exceptional movie star. Yes and Seriette Islands have both seen record visitor figures for 2023. We're very pleased to be joined live in the studio this morning by Mohammed Alzaabi, who is the Group Chief Executive Officer of Mural. It's lovely to see you again. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's great to have you in our home rather than us coming to yours as we did last time. Let's have a look at the numbers of the two islands that you are responsible for. A 38% rise in visitors to Yes last year, a 44% rise in visitors to Seriette. Given the sheer number of attractions that you have on both of those islands, from theme parks to hotels, how are you even starting to measure those numbers?
Brandy, we are very pleased with the number we announced about 2023, seeing more than 34 million visits coming to Yas Island to enjoy their time in our attractions and other facilities we have in Yas Island. We are very proud of that achievement, and I think that is the result of a long-term vision that we put for Yas Island to become an international family entertainment. We monitor a number of people visit our theme parks, our attractions, hotels, and, of course, that includes Yas Mall as well.
So what do we know about the breakdown between people who just come for the day and people who are actually staying?
The hotel occupancy of Yas Island has been very high last year, more than 83% occupancy of our hotels, more than 10 hotels we have in Yas Island. And so, interestingly, summer was high season last year, and that's for the first time ever. For example, Warner Brothers Hotel, during August only, we had occupancy of 93%. And that's amazing. And that's a reflect of success of our vision for Yas Island and the attractions we have in Yas Island.
Well, let's dig into that, because that's one of the things that we are fascinated by. You said summer was high season. How did it compare to the actual high season of winter?
Well, it's head-to-head for the first time. And Brandy, I'll go back to 2007, 2008, when we put vision for Yas Island. Our goal was, we don't want to have low season year-round. And that was very critical to us, how we can crack that. And one of the things we did in Yas Island that was very successful is building all our theme parks indoor attractions. And that helped us to overcome that challenge. And last year, summer, we had very busy season by having indoor theme parks. Combined that with the location of those hotels and proximity to hotel, that helped us to create unique packages, unique experience for our guests to come and enjoy the time.
I know that the increase percentage-wise is huge, 96% increase in summer visitors. How do the actual numbers for summer stack up towards the winter season?
I don't have a breakdown of the number, but I remember on top of my head that only, which is an interesting fact, that July and August contributed 25% of our business last year. And that's amazing. We're very pleased with that. We're very happy. Not only that, Brandy, even Ramadan was a busy month for us last year, which is great.
So what will having Dubai's new main airport, and I realise that it's a wee way away, but it's also going to be closer to you. So we're waiting a decade, but the main Dubai hub is going to be closer to Abu Dhabi than it is now. Is that going to help you with numbers as well?
There is no doubt. Today we have Zayed International Airport that opened recently, and that is only 10 minutes far from Yas Island. Combine that with Al Maktoum Airport with more than 400 gates, that will be 40 minutes far from Yas Island. I reckon by that time, the train will be ready. So you can imagine commuting back and forth from Al Maktoum Airport to Yas Island will be smooth, will be easy. And I reckon that people will come to enjoy the time, enjoy both cities.
So how do you capitalize on that? What do you need to do?
To be ready for that. And DCT has announced 2030 vision for tourism in Abu Dhabi, and we want to increase GDP contribution from 49 billion last year to 40 billion by 2030. And we need to add more attractions. We need to add more rooms for sure to accommodate that number of people. And we want to create, at Abu Dhabi level, we want to create 137,000 jobs by 2030.
Talking about one of your main attractions, let's discuss Ryan Reynolds, who is your new chief island officer on Yes. How long were you in discussions to get Ryan Reynolds signed up?
Before Ryan, I have to go back to 2020. And I will give credit to COVID period. Pre-COVID, we were always in firefight mood. Campaign after campaign after campaign. There was no time to plan and organize for big campaigns. So during COVID, what you said, guys, instead of cutting money or saving money, let's plan for next year. What can we do? And then this idea came of CIO. At that time, it was easier even to sign deal with big influencers. We successfully signed deal with Ranveer Singh, influencer from India, and Kevin Hart as international influencer. It was very successful. Both campaigns were very successful. And then we decided to continue with the next influencer. We were very lucky to have Jason. And now, of course, we have Ryan this year, and we're extremely happy with the results so far.
How long were you in chats with Ryan Reynolds, though? What does it actually take to sign someone of his popularity up?
Ryan was in the list, I think, almost 2 years. In 2020, he was not ready or he was not willing to do that. But 2030, we managed to convince him. I think what helped us is the brand of Yas Island and the previous campaigns. I think he was very happy with our value, our vision, our goals, and that's what helped us to close the deal. I would also give a credit to our partners that helped us to close the deal for sure.
How much did it take to close the deal? How much does it take to get Ryan Reynolds?
I don't think it's about money. You know Ryan. Ryan is a well-known influencer, well-known actor, and he's a billionaire individual. And I don't think about money. I think it's about value, about proposition, and about brand of both entities.
Well, you did mention other attractions other than Mr. Reynolds. What else is on the drawing board at the moment? What do Yas and Sadiat still need?
We are busy, Brandy, with many ideas, many concepts that we are studying today. But extremely busy today with, of course, our next flagship, which is Harry Potter expansion for Warner Brothers. I'm very happy to see that the design phase is almost complete. And soon we'll start the process of construction. We're also busy in expanding Yas Waterworld phase two that will be ready next year. And we are adding two beaches at Yas Island. We're also at Sadiat adding two key facilities or experiences. One is Formula Team Lab Abu Dhabi. That's the first time of a kind that will bring from Tokyo to Abu Dhabi. And I'm very happy that we allow our customers to enjoy their time with the Art Digital in Fenomena Team Lab Abu Dhabi, as well as a Natural History Museum that will be ready next year.
Okay, we've got 40 seconds left with you. If you could bring anything in the world to Yas or Sadiat Mohammed, what would it be?
There's no limit.
Give me an idea. What's your pipe dream?
The list is long.
last question before we let you go. You mentioned new hotel rooms, new keys. What's the target, numbers-wise?
We are studying number of projects, number of ideas. Once we are ready, we'll announce those numbers.
Mohammed Alzaabi, the Chief Executive Officer, the Group Chief Executive Officer even, of Mural, coming in with those exceptional numbers. The 38% rise in visitors to Yas last year, the 44% rise in visitors to Sadiat. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Brandy.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk all things ATM. Why day two of ATM is just around the corner. Day one was very impressive indeed. How do they follow suit throughout? Well, one man who knows a thing or two about ATM, certainly not his first rodeo this year, that's for sure, and he will be heading down there shortly, is, of course, the current Supremo down at Hilton, the President of Middle East and Africa at Hilton, a role that he has held since the beginning of this year. Guy Hutchinson back with Hilton, coming full circle. Of course. What was it? 16 years, guy, with Hilton previously?
16 years, yes. Small sabbatical and back home.
Took you around the world and here you are. You've taken on the mantle since the beginning of the year. How's it been for you so far this year?
Oh, it's been absolutely remarkable.
Good to be back?
It's phenomenal to be back, you know, and the region is just so strong. It's great to be back, and, you know, Hilton as a group is one of the most dynamic in the region, so it's really been amazing.
Dynamic's a good word for it. Diverse as well. I mean, just before we delve into what's coming up, et cetera, and what's going on at ATM, has it changed? Has the brand changed since you've been away or not?
You know, yes and no. I mean, fundamentally, I mean, the scale of Hilton now globally is phenomenal. 7,600 hotels around the world. You know, so an absolutely phenomenal business. But the consistency in strategy, the consistency in culture, you know, that's just stayed absolutely rock solid. So it's been very impressive to see.
You mentioned dynamic. I said diverse. I'm trying to think of a more diverse portfolio. Region of 80 hotels, just over 80 hotels across 11 brands at the moment here in the region. How do you scale that diversity at the moment? What's pipeline for you?
You know, it's no secret. This is one of the, I'm using the word dynamic again, this is one of the most dynamic parts of the world for hospitality and tourism development. And, you know, that we're seeing about 130% growth in our portfolio. So over 300 hotels between trading and pipeline across the region. So it's just an amazing trajectory.
And when you look at the region as a whole and you look at the brands, I mean, how do you work out the jigsaw? Are there certain brands that work better in certain areas, the GCC or the Middle East region, than others?
You know, I think one of the most interesting parts about this part of the world is that diversity you mentioned. And we're seeing scope to grow all of our brands, you know. Luxury and lifestyle, still incredibly important. We've just opened a Waldorf Astoria in Cairo. Absolutely beautiful. It's our 7th or 8th Waldorf in the region. We opened a Conrad in Bahrain. So luxury and lifestyle, doing absolutely phenomenally well. Full service, still there. We're seeing in some of the more mature markets, you're starting to see the emergence of mid-market, which is, I think, you know, very important for the region because that's what really builds out that scalable hospitality. So we're seeing Hilton Garden Inn, a new one here in Dubai in Business Bay, 1,500-room Garden Inn in Mecca, which will be the biggest in the world. You know, our first Hampton by Hilton in Neom in Saudi Arabia. So mid-market, you know, that growth, very important and critical to the growth of tourism. But also new trends, branded residences. Brands and residences is definitely the hot ticket with hospitality development at the moment. And we've got a beautiful branded residence, a Waldorf Astoria, opening here in downtown Dubai.
When you, to keep all those plates spinning at the moment, you're juggling the balls with in terms of the different brands, etc. How do you prioritize? Is there a priority here for you in the region? What's top of the list of things to do?
You know, I think it's less about having a fixed priority on brand, and it's about, you know, we work with a wide range of investors. And I think one of the strengths about Hilton as a brand is actually 60% of our development comes from existing investors. So that really tells you something about the strength of the model. So it's really about working out the right brand, the right proposition for the right market and the right segment of the market. And that guarantees the success of that project over time. So getting that fit right is really critical.
Global brand with a global reputation. You mentioned the dynamism of this particular region as well. When you're talking to head office and talking to your partners globally, is the sort of reputation of the hotel industry here, is it changing? Is the importance of the hotel industry changing here?
It's more than changing, Tom. Anyway, this part of the world is completely unique. You know, I think there's nowhere else in the world where you have a national strategy around a single industry like tourism. You know, we're blessed. So if you take the UAE and, you know, and the impetus behind tourism and the development of tourism assets, Saudi Arabia, where there's a coordinated national strategy when funding infrastructure to grow tourism as a key component of the economy, that's very unique when you navigate the globe. So we're blessed in this part of the world because that puts amazing momentum into our industry.
Well, I suppose if you need an example of that, it is what's happening at the Dubai World Trade Center at the moment. You and I are just talking about the fact that, you know, we've been to a few ATMs in years gone by, and yet it just bamboozles. It gets bigger and better year on year. It attracts bigger names. I suppose that's indicative of just how key the market is at the moment.
absolutely right. You know, ATM every year, stronger, better turnout, quality of people, you know, the networking opportunities and the partners that we meet here. It's probably the preeminent hospitality show in the world. And that's testament to the strength of Dubai and the amount of focus Dubai puts into leisure and tourism as an industry.
You're down at ATM, all the brands being shown down at ATM this year?
Absolutely. Full remit, showing absolutely everything. We've got about 300 people on our stand. You know, it's just an enormous, enormous effort for us. But it's honestly great fun. We love ATM. It's a very important part of our calendar.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, Guy, but I'm looking for sort of, you know, somebody who can give me a little bit of a take on experience as well. I was talking to a couple of industry professionals last night. We were suggesting that, you know, after the dark times of COVID, etc., the ATM party is back as well this year or not?
Absolutely right. I mean, you know, the social aspect and networking is just as important as what you do during the show. So we're hosting our own event tomorrow evening. You know, this is an important part of what we do here, and that's how you get your partners engaged with the brand. They need to see it firsthand.
Nighttime networking, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
24 eh? hours.
24
It's Dubai.
Hours. Great to have you here. Listen, I won't keep you any longer. I know it's a busy time for you. Can't thank you enough for popping in and explaining more. The President, Middle East and Africa of the Hilton brand, Guy Hutchinson. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.